first day of school means reading, writing, and arithmetic are back front and center for kids and teachers. But for another group, it's a big day too, filled with enrollment numbers and curricular standards and responsibility for all that learning. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we talk with the superintendents of two of the area's largest and most complicated school districts. Stephen Green has led the Kansas City Public Schools for just under 2 years, still not accredited, facing proposals from all sides to chop up the district or change it dramatically. We'll hear his plans. And Jim Hinson takes over the Shawnee Mission Schools at a time of great change there. How will his 11 years leading independent schools shape his work across the state line? The view from the district office of the first day of school, today on Central Standard, after the news. Even if you don't have kids, you probably still know it. Perhaps because your friends are posting a string of cute pictures of their kids dressed up in new outfits and carrying new lunchboxes, or maybe you had to wait behind a school bus on your way to work this morning. One way or another, you've probably figured it out. In most of the area, yesterday or today, it was time to go back to school. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. The first day of school isn't just a big day for the kids and the teachers and the parents. It's a big day for the school district's leaders, too, especially superintendents, whose preparation, hopefully, begins to pay off today. We're talking to two who have very full plates this fall. In the second half of our show, we'll talk with Stephen Green of the Kansas City Public Schools, Kansas City, Missouri, about the considerable challenges and opportunities facing that district. But first, Dr. Jim Hinson began on July 1st as the superintendent of the Shawnee Mission School District in Johnson County. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, first days of school yesterday and today. How's it going so far?
So far so good. It's always an exciting time for us to watch the faces of the kids as they return to school. Certainly watch the parents as well. Most of those are very excited for school to start along with their children.
I have to say, I'm not sure what a superintendent does on the first day of school. What were you up to yesterday?
Yesterday morning, I started a little before 7 at one of our high schools. I visited 8 schools just yesterday morning alone. And we divide up all of our schools among the cabinet, if you will, and so we make sure we have a central office presence in all of our buildings. And we're looking for issues in relation to, do we have overcrowding issues? Is there anything that's not going well? But certainly for us as well, it's the culmination of a lot of work and planning on that first day.
I suppose one might think that your work is really done once school starts, but I guess that's not actually how it goes.
Not actually the case. The work certainly continues, but for us, it's really a sigh of relief, if you will, when school starts, because when the kids return to school in the majority of our employees, that's when it's really exciting to be a part of a school district.
Jim, you've been in this job just since July 1st. Your hiring was widely praised based on your experience in Independence, Missouri. How much did that work have to do with what you're doing now in Shawnee Mission?
A lot of things are very similar. Kids all have the same basic needs. The community wants to be involved in what's going on in the school district. All of us in each school district, we're trying to prepare kids for the future. We're asking, what do kids really need to know or know how to perform? Certainly, technology in our society today is rapidly changing. And so regardless of the school district, we're asking ourselves the question, how do we prepare our kids for the future? What jobs will exist in the future? And then involving the community and the network of a school district in education, a lot of things are very similar.
How is it different? How is Shawnee Mission School District different than the work you've spent the last 11 years doing in Independence?
Each state is a little different. And so the rules and regs, some of the statutes vary from state to state. And so from Missouri to Kansas, certainly there are some differences. School finance is significantly different from one side of the state to the other side of the state line. A difference between Independence and Shawnee Mission. Independence, the state of Missouri, has all-day kindergarten that's paid for by the state. That is not the case in the state of Kansas. And so that's one of the significant differences that exist.
Another difference, of course, Shawnee Mission is twice the size of the Independent School District in terms of the number of students. Different challenges or just the same challenges in bigger form?
Really they're the same challenges. Size is all relative, I think, to the size of the school district. But that doesn't really create any difference for me at all. The only challenge it creates is trying to get around to each school in the district to visit those. That makes it a little different. But other than that, the challenges of educating kids today, meeting their basic needs, it's the same everywhere.
You know, I have to think that even with all the excitement of a new school year, there are some real challenges to be addressed in the school district, in Shawnee Mission, maybe in all the districts in Kansas. One of those concerns is the level of state funding, and that's something that has hurt Shawnee Mission the last few years, hasn't it?
It has certainly hurt the district the last several years. As I look at school finance in Kansas from an outsider's perspective, I really have to ask a lot of questions, why the current formula exists as it does today. We don't have the local operation budget option to the ceiling that we really want it, and we ask why.
Talk about that. What is that limitation?
The state limits us in regard to the amount of local money that a school district can raise to benefit its own school system. And so for us, our voters are not allowed in Kansas to go to the polls to say, here is the rate at which we want to fund our local school district. So right across the state line, they have that option. But in the state of Kansas, that option does not exist for our voters.
And when you talk to parents, when you talk to staff in the district, what do you hear about that? Would they be willing, would taxpayers be willing to pay more for their local schools?
You know, I think anytime you can provide the need, here's our need, here's what we want to do with kids, but here's what we need from the community in relation to those resources, communities are great to support that need. And so what I hear from our employees and community is we want to support our kids, we want to support education, but we're not allowed to do so.
So in the last 5 years in the Shawnee Mission School District, there have been $25 million in budget cuts. Four schools were closed, 400 jobs were eliminated. Dr. Hinson, are better days ahead?
Well, it's painful to go through that process, and as I look at the operations of the district and certainly the budget of the district and try to reflect on what's happened in the last 5 years, it's a painful process. You have to reduce services and programs to students. Certainly it impacts your employees. Our teachers haven't had an increase to their salary schedule in the last 4 years, and we're looking at year five to say, can that change at all? So that definitely has a significant impact. We certainly hope there are better days ahead. A part of our mission is to really convince the legislature that there's a better way to fund education, and maybe here's the course that needs to be taken.
Do you think it's going to change, though? I mean, are you optimistic? Do you have a plan for the budget cuts to not continue?
You know, I'm an eternal optimist when it comes to kids. We have to figure out a better way of doing business. I think in the business of education, if we always try to serve the needs of our kids or operate fiscally the way we've always operated, I think we're in trouble. And so for me, I have to look at, okay, in relation to the budget, can we make some changes here or there to be more efficient in our operations? Certainly that's a part of my charge in order for that to happen. But a part of my charge as well is to try to explain to our elected officials, and I've been in the process of trying to meet with our elected officials and our community, here is the impact on our children of budget cuts, and here's what it really means for our future.
So as superintendent, do you see it as part of your role to be in Topeka, trying to bring about change with the legislature, with the governor?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I think a part of my role is to really communicate with legislators, with our community members. Here's what's going on fiscally. Here's why we need to change and help that course of change in that process.
So one of the realities, another of the realities that you're dealing with is decreasing enrollment. Thousands of students fewer than at the peak of Shawnee Mission's enrollment, as well as changes in that enrollment. Socioeconomic status of the student body in Shawnee Mission has decreased over the last several years. What impact does that have not only on your budgeting decisions, but on the way you provide learning?
You know, right now we're looking at a leveling off, if you will, of our enrollment. Early numbers yesterday indicated that our student enrollment had increased by several hundred students. Whether that trend continues over the next several weeks, you know, we'll really have to see. It really impacts facilities. And so we look at the geographical areas that make up the Shawnee Mission School District. Some areas are increasing rapidly in student enrollment. Others are decreasing. So that creates very significant challenges for us. You know, do we bus kids from one area to another area? Do we close a school? Do we have to build a larger school? That's a significant challenge for us in relation to facilities of operation. And anytime you're changing enrollment in schools, you have to look at the course offerings. So instead of four sections of this course, are we going to offer three, or do we have to add? And so that creates challenges for us as well.
Well, we know that our listeners are always interested when we talk about the schools, so we're going to invite them to join the conversation. If you're a parent or a teacher or maybe just a taxpayer in the Shawnee Mission District, we'd love to hear from you. What are your questions for Superintendent Jim Hinson? What do you see as the big issues facing the schools in your neighborhood? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. 888. That's 235-2888. We'd also love to get your emails at centralstandard@kcur.org. We are also watching Twitter today. We're at KCURCST. We're talking with Jim Hinson, the superintendent of the Shawnee Mission School District here on Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. Dr. Hinson, you know, there's a lot of bad news, a lot of challenges facing school districts. What are you excited about this year in the Shawnee Mission School District?
You know, yesterday I had a chance to visit those eight buildings and see what was going on. Certainly we had some summer construction projects, and so it's nice to see the new additions, new library media centers technology that's in place. That's always refreshing. But each year when school starts, to see the renewed optimism in the hearts of kids and their teachers as well. You know, our future is great in this country because of our children and how we take care of our children. And so for me yesterday, to see kids walking to the lunch line or to the breakfast line, they had a smile on their face. You know, they had a name tag on their shirt or the attire, but they were happy. You know, and they were excited to be at school. They knew that they were in a place that people really cared about them, and it was just going to be a great experience for them. That's what's really exciting for us.
Shawnee Mission has a pretty strong academic reputation. Does that make it more of a challenge? Is there a pressure to keep pushing that bar higher?
I think there's always a pressure to increase student achievement just because we've attained at a certain level and a great history, obviously, and tradition in the Shawnee Mission School District. But we never want to be satisfied. And so the question that we ask ourselves, is this the very best we can do for our children, our grandchildren, all the kids in our community? And so that's something we will continually strive for. That's improvement, because we always want to perform at a higher level.
There's been a lot of talk, not just here in Kansas and Missouri, but also around the country, about the core curriculum standards. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a source of conversation at the state level. What are your thoughts about whether there should be a national core curriculum taught in Shawnee Mission schools?
Here's what the national core curriculum really allows to happen, and it wasn't created by the federal government. There's a misnomer out there that this is created by the feds, it's being pushed down, and the feds are watching all of this, and that's really just not true. And so this is a coalition of states, a lot of governors as well, commissioners from those states, even teachers and community leaders that came together to say, we need a common measuring tool across the country. In our country, here's what we expect our kids to know. Here's what we want them to be able to perform. And so right now, can we really compare test scores of kids in Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, other than the ACT score? We really can't do that. And so it gives us that common measuring tool. And I think it's really beneficial.
So you'd like to see that adopted for the
I state. Would like to see it adopted. We're prepared to move forward in that regard in the Shawnee Mission School District.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. If you have questions for Dr. Hinson of the Shawnee Mission School District, Joel of Leawood is on the phone. Joel, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got two kids in Shawnee Mission, 110 and 17. And I've always been curious about the feeder school concept for middle school, where we only have a 7th grade and an 8th grade. That a whole bunch of elementary schools feed into, and then they go directly to high school from there. That was implemented a couple of years ago with your predecessor. Can you kind of talk a little bit about the pros and cons of that method and kind of why we did that? And I would really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Joel. That's a question about how to work from middle school to high school that's in flux in a lot of districts in the area.
You know, it's a great question. The real history of why the decision was made, you know, I don't have that history. I wasn't in the school district. But we ask ourselves a couple of questions. One, in relation to transitions for kids. We really try to reduce the number of transitions. We try to get kids to be with another group of kids that they know, that they're comfortable with. They establish those friendships for a lifetime. And so when you have a feeder system from elementary to middle school to high school, that enables that to happen. A downside of it, you know, you want kids to have a lot of friends. You want them to be exposed to different cultures and climates. And so sometimes the feeder system can also limit that from happening. But generally, a true feeder system eliminates the number of transitions. You create those friendships. The families create those friendships and partnerships. And generally speaking, that helps with the alignment of the educational process.
Thanks for the call, Joel. Let's talk to Patricia in Shawnee. Patricia, good morning.
Good morning. My question has to do with a resource for Shawnee Mission that I don't have a sense is being used, and that's retired teachers. I would like to know, Mr. Hinson, if you see a role for retired teachers in somehow enhancing the education, especially in the overcrowded schools.
Is there a role for retired teachers, Jim?
Absolutely. You know, once you're a teacher, you're always a teacher, and you never lose that love and passion for teaching kids. Yesterday, I visited with a retired teacher in the Shawnee Mission School District. She's back working in one of her elementary schools. She's a classroom aide, and she was telling me her life story about how she taught in the building, and she's now an aide. So from my perspective, retired teachers play a critical role in helping us in the Shawnee Mission School District move the school district forward. So I'm certainly receptive to ideas about how to better engage our retired school teachers.
Patricia, what do you want to do? How would you like to be back involved?
Well, I did try the route of going online and applying as an aide or a para. Never got anywhere with that. And I was with the district for well over 20 years, same building. You know, I feel like I was and still am a good teacher. But the only thing I found in terms of volunteer roles was youth friends. And that doesn't seem enough. It's not enough to have lunch with a child or read to them. I'm talking about actually working with children to help the classroom teacher with kids who are struggling with reading or math concepts, that type of thing.
Well, Patricia, I appreciate your sharing your perspective and your story, and I hope you find a way to get involved.
Thank you.
We had an email at centralstandard@kcur.org from Deborah. She says, my son starts Smart Start on Thursday. She asks, why is there no bus service offered? She'd be willing to somehow scrape together the money to pay for it if the option was offered. Do you know, have you given thought? I know you've only been there about 7 weeks, Dr. Hinson, but bus service for Smart Start?
You know, that's a great question. I haven't encountered that question yet. Smart Start's our early ed program. In relation to bus service, I don't know, but I will find out the answer to that question.
All right. So, Deborah, stay tuned for that. Let's talk to Bill, who called us at 816-235-2888. Bill in Overland Park. Welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks.
I want to discuss something that's very important near and dear to me because of what I've experienced as a coach in the district as well as in Blue Valley. It has to do with prescription drug abuse among high school kids. There's a significant problem both in the Shawnee Mission and Blue Valley districts. I know this from firsthand because I have a son that's addicted to prescription drugs, and he picked that up at Blue Valley Northwest. He moved from Shawnee Mission to Blue Valley to maybe go to a so-called better area.
So, Bill, your question for Dr. Hinson is what can be done about it?
Not only what can be done about it, but what can you tell us today that will be done about the effectiveness of your program, to monitor the effectiveness of your program, just having a police officer in the hallways doesn't really cut it.
Sure.
Why can't children be mandatorily randomly drug tested? You see, because it's what's happening is these are districts with parents who both parents usually work. They carry a prescription drug card. Their kids have them. They bring the drugs into school and they sell them and they distribute them.
Okay, so, Bill, I'm going to let Dr. Hinson get a chance to answer your question since we have only a few minutes and a bunch of calls here. Jim, drug use in the district?
You know, I haven't received that question yet either. We do have our own security force. We have school resource officers in our buildings and a great relationship with law enforcement and certainly with mental health professionals as well. Anytime we deal with the mental and emotional needs of kids and the stresses, we're very concerned of what's going on in their life. For us, in relation to accountability, trying to track the involvement and effectiveness of those individuals in regard to this area, haven't seen information on that, but I'll certainly ask for it. In relation to the abuse of drugs, prescription medication, I haven't heard one story yet in the Shawnee Mission School District about drug abuse, but prescription medication, certainly that's a great question from the caller, and I will inquire a little further.
You know, Bill also mentioned the police officers in schools, and I think one thing that's probably on the mind of a lot of parents, especially after the past year, is security in the mm-hmm. schools. There was a news report this week that a lot of schools, including some Shawnee Mission schools, have beefed up some of the security, at least the physical plant security measures. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, one of the great questions is how do you truly make your school safe? And so we're working on an initiative. We've done this in a couple of buildings. We have a lot of work yet to do in relation to safe and secure entrances, our video camera system, really identifying issues, monitoring the property. Do we want a situation where all of our buildings are locked, the exterior doors, visitors to the building have to buzz in through identification? That's a question we're going to have in the community. In fact, we have a survey out on the street right now. It's on our website for our patrons asking them, what do you want us to do about school safety and security? That's a great question.
We have a call here from Derek in Overland Park. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Henson, welcome aboard. Welcome over to the Kansas side from Independence. You had mentioned at the top of the program a couple of important things, I think. Number one, the willingness within your community in particular to support things within education that are seen as important, and also the decrease in funding at the state level for education statewide. Tying those two things together a bit, how important do you see it that folks within Shawnee Mission in particular and the Kansas school system in general, how important is it, do you see it for them to contact their elected representatives and to make these concerns known at the state level?
Good question,
Derek. I think it's a great question. It's vitally important for the people of the Shawnee Mission School District to contact their elected officials to say, here's how we really feel. Here's what we want you to do. Obviously, elected officials are elected by their constituents to represent them. And so the communication from parents, constituents, patrons to elected officials is vitally important.
Thanks so much for the call, Derek. We had a question from Lisa on Facebook. She asked a very specific question. She says she has a 3-year-old child with autism, and she says she's heard from many parents of kids with disorders on the autism spectrum that special education services are much more limited and of lower quality than what's offered in other districts. Some have chosen to homeschool or to move out of the district. I know, again, you've just been there a couple months, Jim, but is that your perspective on the state of things in Shawnee Mission? Are you looking into that?
You know, right now I'm asking a lot of questions of so many different departments and arenas, and that's been one of my questions to our special education department is in relation to how we're serving kids with different issues, autism being one of those issues. Last week I met with a parent, some other individuals that represent families, advocates for those that have autism. And so that is an issue we're looking into in the school district. My goal is in every area of our operation, we have to be client-oriented or have that customer service sense of operation. Special education is one of those arenas. I'm asking, are we really serving the needs of all of our clients?
Just one more question for you, Jim. That's obviously the start of a new year. A lot of folks want to know what they can do to help. You've already mentioned getting in touch with legislators and others. What else can people be doing right now if they want to show their support for Shawnee Mission
Schools? You know, right now I'm on an 87-day listening tour, really from July 1st to September 25th. I have a lot of meetings scheduled in the community. We have a survey, actually multiple surveys that are on our website right now. We're asking for input and opinions from individuals. Please voice your opinion, provide your input. We want to hear from you.
That's Dr. Jim Henson. He's superintendent of the Shawnee Mission School District, giving his perspective from the district office here on the second day of school. Dr. Henson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll move east across the state line to the Kansas City Public Schools. Superintendent Stephen Green will join us. If you have thoughts or questions about schools in Kansas City, Missouri, we invite you to go to the KCUR Facebook page and post them or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Don't forget, we're also on Twitter @KCURCST. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We talked in the first half of our show today with the superintendent of the Shawnee Mission School District. We're moving now across the state line to Kansas City, Missouri. The challenges facing the district are well known: accreditation, possible state intervention, controversy over school buildings closing. But every first day of school is a day of opportunities and hopes and dreams. And joining us to talk about all of these is Dr. Stephen Green, the superintendent of Kansas City Public Schools. Welcome, Dr. Green.
Well, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It's great to have you back at KCUR.
Good to be back.
So it was the first day of school yesterday. I'll ask you the same question I asked Dr. Henson in the first half. How'd it go?
Good. We had a good start to the school year. I was very, very pleased as I was out and about at a variety of different buildings, and the smiles and on faces of children and on the faces of teachers and administrators. It was a welcome sight, and we welcomed our children back with open arms from the summer break, and now it's time to go to work.
You know, you think about in the spring, they're so eager for school to be over, and then they're excited for it to start again in the fall.
That's right.
What did you do yesterday? How'd you spend your day?
Oh, I began the day at really two schools in one, at Hartman Elementary School, but also that's the they're hosting for the while now, for the time now, Hale Cook. And so it was the school within the school there, and was able to see the beautiful blend of the of those two schools coming together, the parents and the students working together, and it was a delight to see and be there. Then I moved on to Banneker Elementary School, where we've had some extensive renovations go on there, and then moved over to Paseo High School. So that was how I spent a good part of my day.
It's a very full day.
Yeah. Also, I was at African-Centered Lower Campus as well.
Wow. So you're talking with parents and students and teachers, I assume, at all these places. What are you hearing from them? Are they apprehensive about things in the district? Are they just focused on what's going on with the first day of school?
Well, most of them really preoccupied with how things are going to go the first day of school, that last kiss before they drop their child off, the last hug. But also, I think our parents and family members are watching. They're watching us develop. I'm hoping what they're seeing is a school district that is rebuilding itself, is going through a renaissance right now. I think there's a sense of hope and optimism, and as well there should be, because we are moving in the right direction. We still have a very difficult climb and long way to go toward our accreditation, but I think both from a data standpoint and from a cultural standpoint, we're moving in the right direction, and I think folks see that and are encouraged by that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of this journey that the district's been on, specifically the last couple of years since you took over. You were the interim superintendent first, beginning in just 2 years ago, August of 2011.
That's right.
Became permanent last year, so that's not very long. Can you give us a self-evaluation? What have you accomplished in this time?
Well, one of the main things I wanted to bring to the culture was stability. I wanted to establish a presence here and let folks in the community, stakeholders, as well as others, know that I'm here. And I'm going to be here to and I have a we have a mission to get a job done. The second phase of what I can term after I was brought on board in August 2011.
In a rather unexpected moment, as listeners may recall, the superintendent John Covington left unexpectedly.
Right, and so stability was important, but also starting to rebuild from that standpoint on, knowing that we were going to lose our accreditation. It was announced it was going to take place in January 2012. That was a tremendous blow. That was a setback to the district in many ways, and my responsibility was to help heal, but also while we were healing, to focus on what we could do between that announcement and August as far as making a run at regaining our accreditation. And we made a pretty good run. Of the 14 areas that were the target, we were as low as three. We moved to five, and we were within just a smidgen of six, which would have given us provisional accreditation. And we were encouraged by that progress in such a short span of time. Then we started our chart with a full year run at this year's with increased rigor, increased expectations, because a new calibration of measurement came into play and a new accountability system started to work for us.
If you had to assess on the other side of that evaluation, not your accomplishments, but the areas for growth and continued improvement, people are not usually bashful about saying what they think needs to improve in the school district. What's at the top of your list?
Oh, instructional practice and engaging our students. But I think we're seeing good results there. We've taken a serious look at making sure that we provide the resources to help our teachers do the best they can to draw the most out of our students and help them reach heights. So we're moving in that direction, not where we want to be, and I don't think you're ever where you want to be if you're constantly examining yourself and getting better all the time. But we're moving in the right direction. Very pleased with some of our progress there. Certainly, it's about metrics and in this day and age, and accountability, and making sure that we're students are their literacy skills and their numeracy skills are increasing. increasing and getting better. And we're seeing growth there. That's something that's important. That's in some, the state wants to see that. I want to see that as the superintendent, that we take a student from where he or she is, and we want to make sure that they grow. The rate of growth is something that we have to accelerate a bit more.
I do want to ask you specifically about some of those metrics, but I want to invite our listeners to join in this assessment. Especially, we're interested in hearing from parents and taxpayers in the Kansas City, Missouri school district. What improvements have you seen, and what improvements do you still want to see? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. 235-2888. Of course, you can still email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, and we'll be watching Twitter today, too. We're at KCURCST. Accreditation, you mentioned that there's been a change in the standard. So at one point, the district was only meeting 3 out of 14, then it was 5 out of 14, but now they've recalibrated and given you a different scale. What's the new goal you're shooting for?
The new scale was interesting. In the fall of 2012, they announced the retirement of the old model, the 14 targets, and then a new model that's based on a continuum of 0 to 140 points. Half of those, 70 points, represents the threshold for provisional accreditation. 98 points represents the threshold for full accreditation. When we started the year and they gave us our draft, we were as low as 27.5 points. We moved into what I call a full court press mode. In basketball, when you go into full court press mode, you want to change the game. You want to create turnovers. You want to create opportunities to score more points. And so that's exactly what we did. We went into full court press mode with a laser-like focus on what we knew our students need to do in order to be successful in this accountability system. The end result of that, we moved significantly along the line, and in the next few weeks, this community hopefully will be pleased to hear that we've moved well beyond the 70 points for provisional accreditation status.
I assume you do some sort of self-assessment to figure out where you think you're going to come out. How many points are you expecting in this state measure?
Well, I can't disclose that right now because that data, the specific data, is embargoed, and the state wants to keep it as we go through review and appeal process. But let me just say this: we know that we're beyond the 70 points, and well beyond, and the details are yet to come on the 23rd of August when it becomes public. But we will have made a quantum leap toward in the direction that we want to go, and now we have our sights set on full accreditation.
That'll be a big step if that announcement comes out that you're over 70 points and can move toward provisional accreditation.
That will happen on the 23rd.
Tell us a little bit about what areas have seen the most improvement on those various scales. What was the big one that went from zero or almost no credit to really making progress?
Well, we're particularly pleased with our accomplishment in math and science. We made some good strides there, and also in social studies. This was the first year of social studies, and we did quite well. We showed, particularly our high school showed tremendous gains there, and we think that was a big piece of it. We still have a lot of work to do with regard to literacy and increasing our students' literacy skills.
One of the big issues with the accreditation has been the opportunity that may be extended to students to transfer out of the district into adjoining districts. Obviously, that's all tied up in court. No students have been able to actually do that yet. What is the latest in that matter? And are you hoping that never comes to be?
Yeah, we know the court case is still pending, but what we can control is where we are along that accreditation scale. And we think we will present, if we get a chance, I hope we get a chance before the state board in September to present a compelling case for the growth that we've made. And therefore, if we are not unaccredited, the issue of transfer goes away. And so that's really our goal.
Even a provisional accreditation, the issue of transfer goes away?
That is correct.
Okay. So I guess some might wonder how bad would it be for students who want to move out of the district to be able to do that? What is the fundamental problem with that from your perspective as an administrator in Kansas City?
Well, choice is a good thing in many cases. What I struggle with is the thoughtfulness behind the process and the procedure. I cringe every time I think about what's happening over on the east side of the state with Normandy and Riverview Gardens. A process, there was law, that's being executed, but without much thoroughness of thought. And as a result, that has led to some chaotic circumstances and some tumultuous times, and I think has actually exacerbated the problem rather than solved it. So I think there needs to be some careful thought and planning that goes into such a transition, not just to remove the idea of choice, but to make sure that there's thoughtfulness in the planning and execution.
816-235-2888 is the number to call if you have questions for Dr. Stephen Green, the superintendent of the Kansas City, Missouri School District. They're now called the Kansas City Public Schools. If you have kids who started school yesterday, maybe you could share how it went. Do you have advice for the superintendent and the school board on how to make things better? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. Dr. Green, obviously the landscape changed a bit with the state legislature this spring, allowing for an even quicker takeover by the state if things don't go well, if the Board of Education or the Education Commissioner see fit. What would be the obviously that's an outcome you don't want to see. What would be the negative implications of a state takeover of the district?
Well, again, we have not. If a district is declining or if a district is flatline and not improving and students are not doing better as a result of what the district is doing, I think some form of intervention is in order. What I've gone to testify Mr. Eglin and West, the chairman of the board, we've gone together to testify to the state, to the Senate, as well as to the House representative, is to say that if we are improving. And I think we have a pretty good track record right now over the last 2 years of improving, and it'll be dramatically when the data comes out this August, later on this month. If the district's improving, it should be allowed to continue uninterrupted in that progress. And so that's really been our argument, and I think we have a strong case, and the case will get stronger as we go through this year.
I've read elsewhere that you hope that the state would come alongside the district as partners rather than sort of a takeover.
Yeah, that's a hot button for me because I've seen I've been very candid about this, a mixed message. On the one hand, rendering assistance. On the other hand, there seems to be a punitive edge to a district that is not doing well. And there are a variety of reasons why those things happen. But I would like to see something that really actually, as we would with a student that's struggling, help that student do better. And some of the things seem to be more punitive in nature as we see going on the east side of the state.
So can you give me an example of the way that the state might come alongside the district in a way that actually helps and makes a difference and isn't adversarial or punitive, as you say?
Well, and we're engaged in that process. They call it RSIT, the Regional School Improvement Team. A regional team from the State Department has come alongside of us as a critical partner. Every month we're on full display. They set the agenda in collaboration with us, and it's a public meeting, and they are asking the hard questions, the critical questions around data analysis and improvement of student outcomes as well as instructional practice. And I think that has been very, very helpful to us as a third eye, if you will, to witness our progress, but also to critique our progress.
And so you would welcome that feedback as long as it doesn't come with overly assertive intervention.
Correct. The kind of assistance that is encouraging and helpful but critical at the same time, we found that to be very helpful. And we embraced that we were asked to engage in that process. We didn't have to, but we embraced it as a district, and I think we're better because of it. The other kinds of things that are designed to kind of run you out of business, send your students away and ask you to pay the transportation, those kinds of things are having a devastating effect on Normandy and Riverview Gardens, and I think we need to rethink that.
And those two districts, the only two districts in the state currently, other than Kansas City, without accreditation over in the St. Louis
area. At this time, yes.
There are some other proposals out there, things that perhaps even could be done internally that would change the way the district is governed. So, for example, changing the composition of the school board or perhaps making it smaller, maybe the way it's elected. Do you have thoughts about that? I realize the school board would be your boss, but do you have thoughts on ways that the governance of the district might be improved?
I've seen a number of models out there. As I worked in New York City, we had the chancellor, and then we had the chancellor report to the mayor. I've seen a number of different models, but I think it all depends on the community, what the community wants. as a best outcome. I know that I've talked with Mr. West and other members of the board about the idea of a 7-member board versus a 9-member board, and I think there's some favorable interest in that approach, so that we're not different from others, because I think we and maybe one other district are the only ones that have a kind of different configuration. But my responsibility is, whatever it is, go with it and make it work.
We had an email from Tom at centralstandard@kcur.org asking a good basic question. What's the district's current student population, and what is the district's annual budget? You have those numbers at your fingertips?
The current population is about 17,500 when you include our pre-K, and our annual budget is about $238 million.
A lot of folks are talking. I actually asked Dr. Hinson about this in the first half of the show from Shawnee Mission about the core curriculum, standards that are being developed by folks across the country designed to be implemented on a local and state level. What are your thoughts about adopting the core curriculum here in Kansas City?
Well, the Common Core is going to increase the rigor for across the board and allow us to do comparative analysis, not only just from one state to the other, but internationally. I think that was a driving factor behind the Common Core, was to be able to look how our students perform against other students in other countries. And in many ways, I'm an advocate. I'm in favor of it. I think it opens the conversation around assessment reform. I have some serious concerns about norm reference, standardized tests, high stakes tests that don't invite the kind of creativity and collaboration that is, we say, are skills that are going to be needed in the 21st century. And so I've seen some of the Common Core items, and I think they invite more of the kind of project-based, authentic kinds of constructive learning that we will need to have our students successful in the future.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. 816-235-2888. If you have questions about the Kansas City Public Schools, if you want to share your own hopes and dreams for the district, give us a call. 816-235-2888. Kristen writes to us, actually she tweeted at us at KCURCST. She says budget cuts took out language about, they took out language learning, and she wonders if this is important to your district. So I think she means foreign languages. Is that something that's important?
Yes, it is. And we are going to seek to bring that back. We have some schools dedicated to foreign language acquisition. Both in our Carver dual language school and also our foreign language academy, and various of our signature schools actually promote foreign language, and we seek to bring that back. We know it was cut due to severe budget cuts, and I am a fan of students becoming multilingual. I think it helps them prepare for a global society and a global workforce that they're going to encounter. So I will go further in supporting that.
One of the, you mentioned actually at the top of the interview, Hale Cook Elementary, currently a school within a school, waiting apparently for the building to reopen. Where does that stand, and when might we expect to see students returning to Hale Cook?
The timeline is for this time next year. It could be sooner, depending on how enrollment goes, but our timeline is for this time next year to have that building ready. The construction and upgrade of that building is already underway as we speak, and we will hope to have that ready for the students to transition this time next year.
You know, it was a painful thing when all of those school buildings closed, very controversial in the district, obviously, before your tenure began. What does this project mean, where you took a school that had been closed, might well have been sold off or repurposed, but here it is sort of coming back to life? Are we going to see more of that? Is this considered a success story?
Very much so. A success story for a variety of different reasons, not only because of a building that was mothballed that's coming back online, but also these the neighborhood school that we're going to unfold there, that's really unfolding as we speak, is really a part of a collaboration with the Friends of Hale Cook. It's a model of partnership that we want to see go in other places across the community. So that kind of collaboration with a grassroots organization, community-based organization like the Friends of Hale Cook, and us thinking out of the box for a different way for it to happen was something positive. But also, as we look further down the line, our middle schools are going to come online. Central Middle School is going to come online next year, also Northeast Middle. So along that line of other buildings coming back online and being used in a way that's going to be educationally beneficial to our children, you'll see more of those kinds of things.
I do want to ask you about the middle school because that represents a change in sort of learning theory as well. But one more question about Hale Cook. I mean, this school came back to life partly because of the support of a group of residents who said, we really want this. What about areas where you don't have that kind of organized parental or neighborhood support? Might there still be a need for some of those local schools to reopen too?
I think there's a need for that, and we're open to exploring that. I think sometimes the catalyst for those kinds of things comes in different ways in different communities. This happened to come about through the Friends of Hale Cook and their interest in presenting a proposal and doing a feasibility study. Another community might do it a different way, but I think we're open to the prospect of those.
You mentioned the middle schools coming back online. They're coming back online because in those cases, the students won't be going grades, is it 7 through 12, all in one building. What's the thinking about that change?
Well, you know, during my interim year, I was out in the buildings quite a bit. Still, I'm out quite a bit. But I was specifically querying students about their experience, particularly 7th and 8th graders who were in the high school, and also talking to parents. And it was not a scientific study by any means, but I got a pretty clear signal that this wasn't working well for them.
7th graders and high school seniors together is pretty big range.
Yeah, the school is set up for the schedule and everything set up for high schools. The periods are longer. It's you have things like prom and baccalaureate and commencement and homecoming. Those kinds of things are on the public announcements. 7th and 8th graders aren't really there yet. So the focus for me was to see what we could do to create an environment that will allow for 7th and 8th graders to kind of have their own space. And that's the direction we're going.
Another thing that's been on a lot of folks' minds the last few months, not just here in Kansas City, but actually around the country, is the Teach for America program. Mm-hmm. A lot of urban school districts brought in a lot of Teach for America teachers. They were paid less. They cost less. They were young and actually not experienced as teachers. There were, perhaps still are, Teach for America teachers in Kansas City public schools.
Quite a few.
What's your read on that program? Is it causing experienced teachers to not have opportunities in these schools?
Well, I think if in the right balance, I think Teach for America can be a tremendous boost for a school district and for the teachers themselves. And so I think perhaps what if I had a concern is that the balance shifted a little bit too much for us, and I think we have a better balance now.
What are the numbers? Do you know them? How many Teach for America teachers are there now in the schools?
I think well over 250 or so we have. That would be a guess on my part, but I think that's close to the number that we have.
And you think that's the right number?
I think it's right. It's not so much the number for the entire district. It's the number in a given school. And I think every school kind of has its right configuration of veteran teachers and new and inexperienced teachers. And so I think thinking through that process of the matchup for that school is the important thing to do, school by school.
How do veteran teachers feel about this program?
Well, it's mixed. Many of them, but I think for the most part, our teachers have embraced them, particularly if the teachers come with a willingness to learn and realizing that they don't know everything. And when that happens, I think the veteran teacher as mentor and the inexperienced teacher learning the ropes and learning the culture and learning how to properly facilitate a class of instruction, I think it works out very well. But I think there's a blend and I think there's a right mixture that you always have to look for.
You mentioned the change in the middle school model, certainly paying attention to the ratio of Teach for America teachers. What other sorts of changes are you exploring in the district at that sort of policy level that you think could bring real change?
Well, some of the things that we're looking at is making sure that our evaluation system, both for principals and for teachers, is well articulated and well aligned as it relates to our accountability system, both with the state and with the board's vision and expectations. And sometimes just by not revisiting it very often, it can drift, the areas can drift apart. And so one of the things that we're doing is making sure that that is, alignment is tight and right with regard to what we're assessing and holding folks accountable for is what we're expecting folks to do.
Had a lot of turnover in building leadership this year, 9 new principals getting started this year. Does that make it difficult to manage the district, or is that actually healthy?
I think it's healthy in this case because that turnover, and for the most part, was by our design. Sometimes when you're engaged in turnaround, turnover is a byproduct of that. And so what we've done is taken a serious look at our human capital talent, and we want to make sure that we have the best out there. And so in some regards, that may mean encouraging some folks to move on and bringing in a higher caliber talent.
Rick in Peculiar called us at 816-235-2888. He had to go, but he was going to ask a question about the role that parents can play in education. Kansas City, Missouri schools can use parents, right?
Most definitely. We encourage parent engagement and parent involvement a variety of different ways. Even when we select a new leader, we want parent input and involvement for who's going to be the next leader of the school. And so we were just finished that cycle in which we had a great participation on a part of parents of respective schools giving us input as several finalists, as candidates came before them.
So they're actually assessing individual applicants.
Exactly. And but the day-to-day importance of parents being in the school, participating alongside with teachers in many ways. Also, the importance of just making sure that their child attends every day. Now the attendance expectation is 90% of the students, 90% of the time, have to be in school. And I think parents can help us in that way.
All this talk about accreditation, about challenges, about budgets. What's the good news that people aren't hearing about the Kansas City Public Schools right now? What are you excited about that maybe nobody knows?
Well, the good news is that this district is quickly emerging. I think the past has been in the past as far as we're concerned. I know some of that history. I've been told some of that history, but we are being reborn right in front of this community's eyes. This change is real. This change is empirical, data-driven. And I think folks can see that in the way in which we operate as a customer service-oriented culture. We're not quite there yet, but we have a long way to go. And I hope they see it physically in the upgrades to the facilities that we have. The IL field, for instance, Northeast, East, Banneker, the increased technology that we're putting in the classroom, the renovated auditorium at Lincoln High School, the renovated auditorium at Paseo High School. I hope folks are seeing that we are investing and upgrading these facilities, but that's just the tip of the iceberg to the cultural change that's going on within the Kansas City Public Schools.
It's Dr. Stephen Green. He's the superintendent of Kansas City Public Schools. I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here again.
Have a good rest of the school year.
Thank you very much.
You can listen to this program again or subscribe to our podcast or access any of our previous shows by going to Central Standard at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow. We'll explore anime, and we'll also talk with a local band that had the number one album in blues and country. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. Psychologist Wes Crenshaw is here with a look at teenage monogamy. There's another school topic for us. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Suzanne Hogan with Ross Steinmetz and Sangeeta Shastri. Our announcer today was Suzanne Hogan. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.